Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. This is already episode 375 of the pod. Thanks to the many that have been listening to us for a long time. We appreciate your support. Today should be a fun episode. I'm very excited that we're going to cover two, maybe not of the really top teams in Serie A, spice it up a little bit. We're going to cover Verona with our friend Rick Hoff. Verona has been one of the surprise teams in Serie A. And we're going to discuss Atalanta with our friend Mark Doyle. They've been a little bit uneven this season, so we're going to try to get to the bottom of that. And obviously, we had a very interesting weekend of Serie A action, so we'll recap it all, name our winners and losers of the pod, and have a special section of the podcast just for our patrons. But I'm joined at the top with our dear friend, producer, co-host of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. So Alex, a couple of things stood out to me this weekend in Serie A, and I think we can kind of mash them together in a fun discussion. So let me ask you this. What surprises you more? The fact that Milan has won all their games without Ibrahimovic, while Juve has really struggled when they're without Ronaldo against some of the weaker teams in Serie A, or that Conte now seems to favor Darmian to Hakimi. And I have to say, it was absolutely comical when Inter tweeted the lineup, which I retweeted. I had a few Man United fans who didn't realize it was the same Darmian that was at Man United. So what surprises you more? Milan being better without Zlatan than Juve without Ronaldo, or that Conte is going with Darmian over Hakimi?
I really love the question. So on the surface, right when you say that Milan have won all their games without Zlatan, that is very surprising because we know how good Zlatan has been. But actually, that is not my answer. And the reason why is, well, wait a minute. The whole time we've talked about Zlatan's effect on Milan, we've also been saying that he'll rub off on everybody there, that whatever he does at his age with how disciplined he is and how good he is and the fact that he is their best player, I mean, Donnarumma, good shout, but still, he is their leading man at that age. It makes everyone else be on their P's and Q's and a bit more professional. Chelsea are getting it with Thiago Silva, another one Milan fans will have near and dear to their heart. So actually, he's been with them long enough now, David, and I'm not demeaning the other players like they needed Zlatan at all costs. They're good players, but I think he has changed the culture there. So that is not my answer for most surprising out of those. I'm still a little surprised. I don't rate them that much as a team, especially without Zlatan. So that is impressive, but the presence he's brought really, I think, has been kind of contagious. And then Ronaldo means so much to Juventus that I am not too surprised that they struggle without him. I'm not that surprised that they do struggle without him, because despite them being such a talented team on paper, well, their team doesn't have a lot of longevity, continuity together. Their manager is obviously very new. So Ronaldo, no matter how good of a team he's on, even for Real Madrid, of course, he always is the guy who's leaned on. He really, really is. And I know, obviously, for Real Madrid, there were many other players that had massive clutch performances. Sergio Ramos, probably second to Ronaldo during his time at the club, and many more players. But it always has been kind of a dependent thing on Ronaldo because he makes it that way. He's that good, and he's totally fine with you putting the pressure on his shoulders. So I'm not surprised that Juve struggle without Ronaldo, given the reasons I just gave, especially with the lack of continuity and the new manager. But still does surprise me a little bit that they struggle this much, David, because they are a damn good team, and they shouldn't be this dependent on one player, because the Juve we've known for a long time during this Scudetto run is they've been just a good team. They've been just a good team with a lot of good players, a lot of continuity. I mean, a huge part of Juve's identity over this whole Scudetto run has been continuity and cohesiveness. So it is a bit surprising because they certainly haven't been this dependent on one player, like they have this season during this run. So you got to be surprised a little bit. And then on top of it all, I just have extra surprise behind what's going on at Juve, because who is carrying Juve, especially when Ronaldo's not out there, but who's also playing well even when Ronaldo is out there? Morata. And I know that, I know that I am rightfully always saying that certain players like Morata need a league and a country specifically to do well, and I stand by that. So it actually totally goes in line with what I've said about Morata for a long time. Never said he was a bad player, just said he didn't have the mentality to cut it at Chelsea. Fine. But he's really at home at Juve, so it still is a little surprising to me just how well he's doing, but it's Juve. They have good players. So speaking of having good players, yeah, I would think they'd be able to do a little bit better with those good players, even without Ronaldo. So that'll fall in the middle. It surprises me a little bit more, which is actually surprising me that I'm saying this, but I stand by it. It surprises me a little bit more that Juve are struggling this much without Ronaldo than it does that Milan are doing well without Zlatan. So the most surprising to me is Antonio Conte. It's just a little bit surprising, at least the way you phrased it, David, right? Maybe Conte in 2 weeks' time only plays Hakimi again and Darmian's not in the picture. So it could change back. It could revert back. But just on the surface, like you referenced in your question, if United fans figured out it was the same Darmian, they would be like, what? Over Hakimi? Everybody's signing of the window? So it is just surprising. I think it wins for me because of the names involved. Like, Hakimi was such well-received signing from everybody, meaning like whether you're an Inter fan, whether you were a Serie A fan or not, and just kind of paid attention to the top five leagues, you were like, wow, Hakimi to Conte, wingback stuff. And it got rave reviews. I mean, I gave it rave reviews. So to have Darmian even for a moment here and a moment there, making it all a discussion, I think it has to win. Now, obviously, if you peel back the curtain a little bit, you know that Hakimi has an own goal. He had an error not too long ago that wasn't great. So he hasn't been flawless. He's shown good moments. But I think just the fact that you have the characters Darmian versus Hakimi, that makes it most surprising. And if that continues, then it only gets more and more and more surprising. So, yeah, I actually got to surprise myself and say the Zlatan one somehow the least, even though it's still surprising.
Wow.
Then Ronaldo, and then the Hakimi Darmian thing. What about you?
Yeah, no, I got to pat myself on the back. That was a fun question. Yeah. You can go a lot of angles. Where to begin? I have to give a ton of credit to Milan, who won without Zlatan, and they were without Pioli too, and move over Nereo Rocco, Arrigo Sacchi, Capello, Ancelotti. Bonera is on track to be the greatest Milan manager ever. Really unbelievable. I have to give them a lot of credit. I have to say, you know, I said if they beat Napoli, I would have to believe they were in the race to win the Scudetto. Then they win without Zlatan. Granted, it was Fiorentina, but Fiorentina had a new manager. You'd figured they would try to get back on track. They would have kind of the emotional thing of having a new manager. But no, Milan was able to win. So super kudos to them. And I do take them seriously. Definitely a lot of vibes this team gives me off of Conte's first season at Juve when they won out of nowhere. I have to say, Juve without struggling so much without Ronaldo, that has really surprised me. Look, I said all along I would judge Juve when they had Ronaldo and De Ligt back. And for a little while, that sounded and looked really smart because they started winning and playing really well. But then the flip side is like, okay, Juve should be able to beat the Crotones and the Beneventos of the world without Ronaldo, just because of the squad that they have. So that's very surprising to me. Pirlo then talked about the team lacking personality, which was a pretty big shot at the team. But I have to say, I still, you know, and I didn't pick them to start the season, but I still feel pretty confident that Juve is going to win the Scudetto. I just see every team, except for Milan so far, really having a hard time having continuity and being consistent and all. And I do think at the end of the day, Juve's talent is going to come through. I feel so good about them winning the Scudetto that if you told me no Chiellini for the season, and they got barely anything from Dybala. I still think they can win. But these struggles without Ronaldo are definitely concerning. But I think he can carry them to the Scudetto, but I'm certainly very, very surprised at what a hard time they are having without him. They're just not getting a lot of goals from any players other than Morata and Ronaldo. Kulusevski leads the team after them with two. I think Pirlo has a lot of figuring out to do there, but I still think Juve is the favorite to win the Scudetto. And what can you say about Conte? I thought that win against the Sassuolo really, really surprised me. These were two teams really going in opposite direction. And it feels like Conte circled the wagons, went back to what he really knows, was able to win without Lukaku. So let's give him a lot of credit there. And he inserts Darmian for Hakimi. And yesterday in the press conference for the Champions League game, he says that Hakimi has to learn to adapt to Serie A and learn defensive responsibilities and whatnot. And I saw Biasin was one of my favorite Inter commentators. He was like, great, okay, we always say that in Italy, it takes a long time for players to adapt, but maybe Italy should look at the countries that are doing better in the Champions League and what are they doing with players. Maybe we should copy that, which I think is very interesting. But yeah, in one hand, this surprised me the least, that Conte is going to his workman-like team and gets a big win against Sassuolo, who is known for playing the flashiest style in Serie A. So look, it's funny in a way, but I think Hakimi has to start being a little bit worried with this move. And you look at Eriksen as well. The Inter makes the biggest signing in the January window with Eriksen. That's been a big bust. Hakimi, I don't want to call him a bust because he started off super strong in the league, but he's struggled now recently. And I could see Conte, if this whole workman-like thing works out well for him, that Darmian could be getting some starts. So definitely very intriguing question. But my takeaway from the weekend is I definitely take Milan seriously for the Scudetto. I still think Juve are the favorites. And Inter, who I picked to win the Scudetto, gave me some hope that my prediction from the start of the season has some weight. But Alex, I think you picking Juve at the start of the season was the right call.
Well, I'm questioning that every day. I certainly am. But especially because I don't know what's up from down when Morata is the main reason why my prediction is still looking okay. So weirder things have happened in the world. And if that continues to happen, I think I'll have to actually give Morata probably more credit than I ever gave him. Once again, I never said he was a bad player. I said he was a good player. But I don't want to make it sound like when I say, oh, Morata can't succeed at Chelsea, like succeeding at Juve is easy. So if there are people out
No, I agree.
Yeah, if there are people out there listening thinking that I'm one of these Premier League snobs, I'm certainly not. Obviously, though, yeah, the media maybe in England is just a step up, but that's not even it. It's just more that it snowballed so badly for Morata that it wasn't so Chelsea-specific. It was just that the hole was dug so deep for Morata that it became hard to get himself out of it. He was miserable. He started only really getting along with his Spanish teammates, said all of his other teammates didn't pass him the ball. I mean, it just got messy. So I'm not saying succeeding at Juve and carrying Juve right now is an easy thing. So props to him for sure. All right, well, let's move on to winners and losers, David. Maybe we hear some of the same names, maybe we don't, but let's start with our winners.
Absolutely, yeah. And we have to start with Inter, both in chronological order, first game of the week. And I thought that was a really, really impressive win. In Italy, there's Operaia is a team that has a workman-like, factory-like work to them, the way they played. And I thought Conte absolutely embraced his Operaia mentality. We mentioned Darmian at the top. Another player that I think deserves a ton of credit is Skriniar. He's been playing very well recently, is adapting to that three-man defense. Look, we can criticize Conte a ton for Eriksen, and we can start putting Hakimi as a potential issue. But at least with Skriniar, things are back on track. Barella, I thought, had another sensational game. What a midfielder he's become. Love watching him. And Lautaro, been really excellent this season. He showed you a ton of his repertoire just in the first 15 minutes, both the class, the physical strength. Absolutely love Lautaro. I love his versatility. He can play with Lukaku, can be the main striker. Really, really a great player who was lost for a few months earlier this season. But I think he's starting to make a case that he can get back in the conversation as one of the most valuable transfer fee-wise players in Serie A. So good for Inter to have Lautaro back. They really needed it. And then we had Juve, and I think the fact that Szczesny was their best player against Benevento really speaks volumes to how disappointing that performance was. Of course, Morata with another goal. And for Benevento, shout out to Letizia, who is from Napoli. He really enjoyed scoring against Juve on the weekend of Maradona, and his celebration showed it. I got to give a lot of credit to Benevento. I really like this team. I think Pippo Inzaghi's become a very good coach. Good job by him. And then we are going to get to these two teams with our guests, Verona and Atalanta. Verona, big win for them. Juric, who is a disciple of Gasperini, beats his master. Great game by Silvestri, keeper on Verona. We're going to talk about with Rick Hoff in a second. And Miguel Veloso had a strong game as well. In Milan's win against Fiorentina, shout out to Donnarumma. Very strong season for him. Calabria, you can make a case as one of the best right backs in Serie A right now, has really improved. Romagnoli with his best game of the season. And I think even Sailmaker is really a nice, intriguing bench player slash starter for Milan. A valuable player. I like him. Then we had Lazio losing at home to Udinese. Big win for Udinese. I think DePaul confirms himself as the best player in the relegation race. They also got good performances from Pussetto and Pereira, two players that arrived from Watford in the offseason. They've been doing well for them. Then Cagliari, although it was a disappointing draw against Spezia, another good performance by Spezia, by the way. At least Pavoletti scored for the first time in 553 days. I couldn't believe it was quite that long. He's had a lot of injuries. He was really good, Pavoletti, for a while. It wouldn't shock me if we see him, though, go to Genoa in January. There's a lot of strikers at Cagliari. Pavoletti has ties to Genoa. I could see that move happening in January. Then we had Bologna, talking about a long streak. They had their first clean sheet in 431 days. Damn. Talk about Serie A not being boring and defensive. Just watch Bologna. Damn, finally a clean sheet. They beat Crotone 1-0. Then we had Napoli, very impressive win against Roma. Absolutely demolished them. Insigne, captain, strong performance for Maradona. Well played there. What was interesting to me about this game is Gattuso went back to the 4-3-3. And Fabian Ruiz, Dem, and Zielinski played really well. Roma is a very good midfield as well. We've been praising a lot Bakayoko and his signing, but you have to wonder if Napoli is better suited going with this 4-3-3 as opposed to having Bakayoko in front of the defense. But at least it gives Gattuso options, and we've seen that Gattuso is more tactically astute than most people give him credit for. Then a few more winners. We had Belotti, who carries a lifeless Torino, the home draw against Sampdoria. They really needed to win this game, but another strong game from Belotti. And then Parma, they really needed this win against Genoa, and an away win yesterday in the race to avoid relegation. This was personal for their manager, Liverani, because last season he was at Lecce. Genoa relegated Lecce, and he was close to joining Genoa and then ended up going to Parma. So big win for him. And finally, kind of comical, but on Friday there was this tweet on the most popular soccer players, and I use soccer because this is here in the U.S. by state, most jerseys sold. I think everyone was shocked to find out that Bonucci is the most famous player in South Dakota.
The Dakotas have always been a weird state, David. What is up with that? We got Bruno Fernandes in North Dakota, and we got, no offense to Bonucci, South Dakota. I think there's a population of one there.
It's unbelievable. 1,000 names right away tweeted me and asked me if Deadwood was in South Dakota. It's one of our favorite shows. And he says Bonucci looks like the main character, who is a sheriff. And I did point out that Bonucci definitely has the face of someone who looks like a cop, for sure. But fantastic. Well, kudos to Bonucci. I don't know how that happened. I'm appalled that Dakota has a North and South, four senators, but they definitely have some interesting choices when it comes to favorite football players. So congrats to Bonucci.
Quickly, did you see Vermont? Dele Alli?
Yeah, Dele Alli.
What? First of all, now
they smoke some good they smoke some good weed up there. Those northern lights up there are good. I don't know.
I can't hate on that, but now I hate Vermont. I mean, if that's no. Dele Alli, no, I don't even care. I know I'm a Chelsea fan, so I'm extra hard, but if you're buying the most Dele Alli jerseys, we got issues. All right. Well, I'm not going to be too harsh and call those people losers. But, David, we do have some losers, so let's get to those.
Yeah, so I broke my heart to see Sassuolo, my team, get their ass kicked by Inter. I have to say that is kind of my only minor complaint about De Zerbi, is that this happens at times. Games where you feel like Sassuolo is just like ready to take the next step, they fall apart. But again, you know, they lost to Inter, who I picked to win the Scudetto. Defender Chiriches played hurt, and it showed. He was kind of a nightmare for a while, but him being out for a while might come back to bite them. Consigli, who's been sensational this season, their goalkeeper with his first bad game. I thought Juve's midfield, and I mentioned at the top, Juve's getting no goals from their midfield basically at all. That needs to change if they want to get back on track again. I think this midfield can be good enough. It's not great by any means, but I definitely think it has the potential to be the best Juve midfield in a while. Let's say even since Vidal left and Pirlo went to New York. Then we have Fiorentina, who lose their second match under Prandelli. I know people think I'm joking, but I really think Iacchini will be back by early next year. He's just more used to the race to avoid relegation. I still remain shocked that there was so much positive reception on Prandelli going back to Fiorentina. Speaking of bad, Lazio got their asses kicked at home by Udinese. Definitely poor Strakosha, their goalkeeper. Not great. Defender Patrick absolutely got demolished in this game. But kudos to Udinese here. So another keeper that struggled is Mirante. And look, for a little while he was, and he's almost 40 years old. He's been a backup. He was pretty good for Roma to start the season. But sooner or later, it's going to come back to bite them. I think Roma really needs to look in the January window for a keeper. I'm not sure if they can get someone like Silvestri or Cragno in January, but that's an absolute position of need for them. Ibanez also had a nightmare of a game, and Zeko definitely did not look right coming back from COVID. And the final losers, and this is a little bit upsetting, I have to say. You know, we were talking a lot about Maradona, and over the past few days in Italy, there were some quotes, some back and forth that were really very unfortunate. We have a Juve legendary player Antonio Cabrini, who was part of the 1982 World Cup winning team, won at Juve, won the Champions League against Liverpool. He said that had Maradona gone to Juve, he would probably still be alive. And although he had a great relationship with Napoli, he thought the relationship with the city contributed to his lifestyle. And he think had he been at Juve, it would have he would have gotten his life together. So I don't believe for one second Maradona goes to Juve and becomes an angel. I don't believe that at all. But even if I did believe that, I certainly would not say it the week that he died, when the city of Naples is in real mourning. I think you guys heard it in Napoli Outsider's voice. He's from the region. He's over there. I think you really heard the emotion in there. That would be like saying, you know, if a family member dies and you're like, well, you know, had he been married to someone else, he'd probably still be alive. I mean, you just don't say stuff like that. I thought that was incredibly inappropriate. But the response from Napoli's president at the time, Ferlaino, who was the president when Maradona was there, and he's featured often in the awesome documentary by Asif Kapeda on Maradona, Ferlaino, his response was that had Pesotto played for Napoli, been in Napoli, he wouldn't have tried to commit suicide. Pesotto's a Juve director who tried to commit suicide a long time ago, thankfully survived. So that was really unfortunate. You know, sometimes if you have nothing good to say, best to say nothing at all, especially when someone passed away. So I thought both Cabrini and Ferlaino were completely out of line there. Okay, let's go to a much more positive topic. Let's talk about the surprise team of the season in Serie A, Verona. I have to say I had picked them to finish ahead of Fiorentina. I'll probably clinch that by December, but I didn't expect them to be quite this good. So we're going to get a perspective from that from our friend Rick Hoff. Okay, so today we are covering Verona and Bologna, which are our other guest is from Bologna, which would be a very nice road trip in Italy. You could do both those cities in one day and eat very well. So after speaking to Mark Doyle in Bologna, we are speaking with our good friend Rick Hoff in Verona. He has both a website called Notes from Verona, which is also a superb book, which we'll talk about at the end of the interview. This is our second chat together. I've really enjoyed watching Verona, so he's become our correspondent for the team. So, Rick, it's a real pleasure to welcome you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Grazie, David. Thank you. It's a pleasure to speak to you again, especially after the weekend and that your teams have done so well.
Yeah, no, I have to say, look, you know, I was very bullish on Verona going into the season. I thought too many people had written them off because of the players they sold. But I have to say, I didn't expect them to be quite this good. So they just beat Atalanta. I have to say, I thought they were very unlucky against Sassuolo. They could have drawn or maybe even won that match easily. So I think if you're a Verona fan, you really couldn't be happier with how things are going. So let's start with this. You're an excellent writer. I really enjoy your writing, not just on calcio, but in life in general. So let me ask you this. If you could pick one word to describe this current Verona team, what would it be?
Well, I'm going to choose an Italian word, actually. I hope that's okay. There's a word that's been repeated on social media over the last 24 hours or so in relation to Verona, especially after their game against Atalanta last night. And that's capolavoro.
Capolavoro. I like
capolavoro,
it.
Capolavoro, yeah. So that's masterpiece. So I'm going to go with masterpiece or capolavoro because for me, okay, it's maybe a low budget, unorthodox, and quite surprise masterpiece, but I think it's a masterpiece nonetheless. And last night against Atalanta, it was really a Juric masterclass. So yeah, I would definitely go with capolavoro, even though, you know, it seemed organized chaos could be another way to describe what went on last night. You know, Lovato went off after 30 minutes. Danzi came on for 20 minutes. He was replaced at halftime by the loss. So, but only then at halftime, Yuriki's picture began to take shape. You can see what he's trying to do. 15 minutes into the second half, he brings on three fresh attackers. And from that point on, Atalanta are really struggling. Veloso scores the penalties again. Zaccagni makes it two, and in the end, we've seen, you know, the apprentice Juric, he beat his master, Gasparini.
Absolutely,
so, yeah. Great result for us last night.
I like it. Capolavoro is a nice word, and yeah, you're right. Definitely, Juric is a disciple of Gasparini, and he definitely stole his lunch money, Ben. So I want to talk about a couple of Verona players. And I want to start with the keeper because I thought Silvestri last season was one of the best keepers in Serie A. I thought he was a big reason Verona had such a good defense. But I think he's really stepped it up a whole other notch this season. If you told me he's the best keeper in Serie A right now, I really wouldn't argue with you that much. So I wanted to get your take on it. Do you agree that he's been even better than last season? And how instrumental is he to Verona's current success?
Yeah, absolutely, David Gulli. He's been superb, and I think you captured it really well. I mean, I hadn't really ever thought about him being the best goalie in Serie A, you know, you would always think perhaps of Donnarumma in that position. But, I mean, when you consider that Donnarumma doesn't really have that many saves to make in your average game, if you saw him against Fiorentina this afternoon, you know, he's not making a lot of saves, whereas Silvestri is making a lot of saves. Just, you know, the nature of the way Verona play, he's making a lot of saves, and even last night was no exception. And the stats really speak for themselves. Last season, as you say, he was good. This season, if anything, he's even better. Verona have only conceded 7 goals this season in 9 games. He's kept 4 clean sheets. I think there's a good case that you could say he's the best in Serie A. He never makes a mistake. Even his distribution is great as well. You know,
yeah.
He knows when to go long. He knows when to play it out of the back. He's super sharp. You saw him last night. He came out really fast on a couple of occasions to shut down the Atalanta attack. And I think really he deserves a chance. He's been called up to the national team.
Yeah.
But obviously Donnarumma, especially in the form that Milan are in at the moment, Donnarumma's going to be difficult to beat. But yeah, there's no question for me. He's up there at the moment. He's having the season of his life, I think. And he's enjoying it as well. I think he's enjoying it.
For sure. Yeah, he recently made it on the Azzurri. You're right. I mean, there's some good goalkeepers for Italy, but he's been really, really outstanding. So let's talk a little bit more about the defense. So a lot was made about Kumbula and Romani leaving, with no name players. Juric just seems to really have an excellent defense, and it's not just about the keeper. Obviously, we wanted to start with Silvestri, but there's a lot more to that. So what do you make about Verona's defensive solidity? Do you think it's beyond the individuals? It's a lot of the system too. So how would you describe it to someone who's maybe not that familiar with Verona?
I mean it's incredible really when you consider that we lost Kumbula and Rahmani in the summer. And if you add to that Gunter, who was the third of our main defenders from last season, he's barely played this season through injury and COVID-related issues. So really, it seems that almost every game we play, Juric is having to cobble together a makeshift back three. And last night it was Davidovic, who is at best a third choice for that position. You had Lovato, who was just 20 years old and was fighting his way back from injury. And then Ceccherini, who is a player who Fiorentina fans couldn't wait to get rid of. So on paper, it's not exactly a formidable-looking back three. But with Juric, I think he gives the players a certain freedom. He sticks religiously to this back three, so the players understand what the system is. But within that, they have a certain freedom to push forward when the situation allows. But they're pretty fierce as well. They know the roles. They don't give opposition players a yard. They're pretty physical. And then you've got the likes of Faraone and Di Marco, who are playing in the midfield, really, but they can tuck in alongside the back three and add an extra bit of defensive cover. And even, you know, players like we spoke about before, Zaccagni, who's a really offensive player, but he rolls up his sleeves and puts in a shift and comes and helps out at the back as well. So, I think you just get the best out of all these players. They're so motivated. None of them are making mistakes. The defensive record is just brilliant.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The players who on paper are, you know, average or emerging players at best.
I agree. So you mentioned Zaccagni, and he's what I want to talk about next. And look, in Italy, young players is different than other countries, maybe. It takes a little bit longer to launch a player in Italy. And Zaccagni at 25 now is really coming in on his own. I've had Verona fans tell me about how great Zaccagni was last season. I saw it in glimpses, but I think this season he's been sensational. I thought he was the man of the match against Atalanta. and has really brought it in big games. So what do you make about Zaccagni's evolution? And do you agree that kind of like Silvestri, he's taken it up a whole other notch this season?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You're right. We got some glimpses of it last season, and he had a really good season last season. That was probably his real breakthrough season for us in terms of number of appearances and overall contribution. And this season, he's just taken it a step forward. So I think he's a player who is playing with a lot of confidence. And he's you know, he's been given freedom by Juric. He's been given confidence by Juric. Whereas previously, when we were at the tail end of the Serie A or struggling in Serie B, he was probably a luxury player. Whereas, you know, this season, he's just he's taken it on to another level. He's, for us in Verona, he's almost like he's a homegrown player because he's come up through the ranks. He's been here for so long now. He's been here maybe 5 or 6 years. So he's probably one of the longest serving players at the club who are currently playing. So the fans love him for that reason. And I think he was given the captain's armband, I think, either in the Coppa Italia game or the game last season, which is a kind of an indication of, you know, the where he stands in the pecking order and what Juric thinks of him. And you know, he was brilliant again against Atalanta. If it wasn't him man of the match, then it was perhaps Veloso. But yeah, his overall contribution, not just when he goes forward, but, you know, he comes back and helps out in defence as well. He's the kind of player, I have to say, when I was watching the game last night with my son, and I just love watching him and just saying to my son, watch how this guy plays, because this is how, you know, how every young player should be playing. He's fast, he's intelligent, he works hard, he's a real role model. And then he came on, I don't know if you saw, he came on afterwards and he was interviewed. He was very funny in his post-match interview. You know, he basically said at one point, I paraphrase, but we showed everyone we've got balls. he's a funny character as well, and he's I think he's a great player to have in your team, and he's another one who should be, you know, pushing at the door of the national team.
Absolutely, absolutely, I agree. He's been really, really excellent. So he's, 25, been around for a while, but Verona has some very intriguing, much younger players than that have come out a little bit out of the blue. You've been writing about them very well on your site Notes from Verona. So tell our listeners about one or two of Verona's young players that we should keep an eye on.
Yeah, okay, there are quite a few, you know. I mean, Zaccagni, you know, he seems like a veteran now, but he's only 25. But compared to some of the kids that are being, that are being used now, he is a veteran. You know, we've got 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds playing regularly for us. So a few to mention last night, and more generally, we caught glimpses of Cole, of Salcedo, and Favilli. These are guys who have been around a wee bit. They're about 20, and they're breaking in now to the first team. Below them, there's another tier probably of youngsters coming up from the Primavera. There's the Argentinian guy, Bruno Amione. There's Destiny Udogi, who's played a couple of games now, and Lorenzo Bertini, who's coming up from the Primavera. Obviously, you've got Lovato as well now, he's just turned 20. And he's obviously made a massive impact on Serie A, and I think he's got a massive future ahead of him. But probably the guy I would single out most, the guy I enjoy watching the most, is Ivan Ilic.
Yeah.
He's just 19 years old, Serbian, on loan from Manchester City. But he's been given plenty of game time because Veloso has been out through injury. And what a player. He's going to be... left footer, he's intelligent, reads the game really well, pretty offensive, likes to play thread through some great vertical passes. So he's always a threat going forward. He's unlucky, actually, not to have scored a few more goals because he's come close a couple of times. So he's the one if I had to give you one, just because of where he currently stands in the team, he's getting plenty of game time. And you can see him every game, he's getting better, his confidence is growing, and he's still only 19 years old playing in the heart of Verona's midfield.
Absolutely. Great shout. And so did our friend Enrico Passarella, who is great with scouting players, mentioned him recently as well. So, Rick, you did a great job giving us a perspective on the current Verona, but I want to close on this, take a look at the past. Obviously, Maradona been a lot in the headlines a ton with his passing. He'll always be associated with Serie A, and you wrote brilliantly on him this week. Maradona's first game in Italy in Serie A was at the Bentegodi against Verona, and you wrote a great article on that. You know, I always say that the glory days of Serie A for me was in the 80s, because you had Maradona at Napoli, you had Zico at Udinese, Junior at Torino. I mean, these are legendary players on smaller teams. And Verona managed to win a Scudetto in all this with El Chiaia right around this time. I mean, it was really a great time for me as a kid growing up with Serie A. So give our listeners a little bit of perspective on Maradona's first game at the Bentegodi and his connection to Verona.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's been a real pleasure just looking back at that period. Obviously, tremendously sad that Maradona dying, but just to go back and look at some of the footage from that era, it's just incredible. You know, as you say, the real glory days of Serie A. And yes, so it's 16th of September 1984, and it was Maradona's Serie A debut at the Bentegodi, and that was in the days before the Bentegodi even had a roof. And the place, you know, it was absolutely filled to the rafters, three tiers, absolutely full. You know, just incredible atmosphere around the stadium that day, full of photographers all keen to get the first glimpse of Maradona. And obviously, that is right in the peak of the glory days of Italian football. Verona won that day, remarkably. Verona won that day. They won 3-1. And it was another foreign debutant, Hans-Peter Briegel, who was given the task, actually, of marking Maradona. And he did a great job, actually, of keeping Maradona quiet. And he even managed to score a goal himself. So that, I think, you know, it was an early indication that things wouldn't be handed to Maradona on a plate. Everything he did in Italy for Napoli, he had to work for it. It wasn't going to be easy for him. And that that game against Verona that day was a real, message, I think, that was going to be the case. That there were going to be no easy games. Winning the Scudetto at a club like Napoli wasn't going to be easy. And, you know, the thing was, it wasn't until his third season at Napoli that he eventually did lift that historic Scudetto. It was Verona in May 1985 who won the Serie A that season. Real glory days. I mean, the other thing that shouldn't be forgotten, you know, Maradona, of course, when he came to these clubs in the north, to the Milans, Inter, and to an extent, of course, also Verona, he got real abuse. You know,
The
fans in the north really didn't like him, and didn't like Napoli for that matter, and what they represented, if you like. So, there was a real, would I go as far as to say hatred? Yes, probably. Which all culminated in the 1990 World Cup final in Rome, where the Italian fans were booing the Argentinian national anthem, and you could see Maradona cursing them under his breath. So he was really angry that day. And that, you know, there was a real rivalry between the North and South back in those days. So one of the nice things this week actually has been, you know, everyone really has put that rivalry to one side and really just reflected on the fact that we were so lucky to have a player like Diego Maradona come and play in Verona and come and play at the Bentegodi and bless Italian football with his amazing skills and character and personality.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's close on this. That article on Maradona, which was excellent, I recommend it, can be found on your site Notes from Verona, which is really a great place. Calcio, culture, you name it. But it's also a book. You recently wrote a collection of essentially diary entries during lockdown. And the last time you were on, we had quite a few of our listeners check it out. They enjoyed it. So tell us again how this book came about and what can expect if they check it out. It's definitely very good.
Basically, it's, as you say, just a series of diary entries from the kind of early days of the Italian lockdown and what life was like for us as the crisis really evolved. So it just describes everyday life, really, from the mundane things like going to the supermarket and getting stopped by the police and just everything that we went through as individuals and as a family living in Verona during the height of that crisis. Hopefully with a bit of honesty and a bit of humour and a lot of culture and, you know, some little stories about life and history in Verona as well. So it's a short read. It's, I think, about 60 pages, so you can read it in one good sitting. But yeah, I've had some feedback from some of your listeners, and they enjoyed reading it as well. So it's still up there on Amazon if anyone's looking for a bit of Christmas shopping or a wee bit of nostalgia for the first lockdown.
There you go. Great stuff. It'll make a really excellent Christmas gift. So, Rick, I can't thank you enough. It's always fun chatting Verona with you, and I look forward to doing this again very soon. Keep up the great work, my friend.
Perfect. Thank you, David. I appreciate that. Thanks.
Okay, well, I'm recording this on Sunday, and my Sunday is about to get a lot better. Off to a good start after a triple shot of espresso, and I'm going to chat calcio with my very good friend Mark Doyle, one of my favorite guests. He is the deputy features editor for Goal. He is based in Italy. He's in Bologna. One of my favorite calcio writers, and he's kind of become our Atalanta correspondent. So we're going to talk a lot about Atalanta and a couple of other topics that Mark has covered in his article. So without further ado, my friend, bentornato to Calcio Land. Always a pleasure to chat calcio with you, Mark.
Cheers, David. No, it's great to be back, and I enjoyed the show so much. So it's always an honor to be on. Thank you.
All right. Well, it's a pleasure to speak to you. So before we get to Atalanta, let's briefly talk about Maradona. Obviously, there's been a lot of coverage on this, and you recently interviewed John Barnes, and I've had the chance to interview him as well. A lovely guy. So tell me a little bit, as someone who covers calcio and who's based in Italy, who has an understanding of the historical impact about Diego, what has stood out to you about his legacy and everything that we've read and heard since he passed away last week?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to get through because he was such an influential figure and he had such an impact. And you mentioned John Barnes there. And I grew up idolizing John Barnes as a kid, and you know, as a left footer, idolized this left winger that played for Liverpool. And when you hear someone like that talking about how during the 86 quarter final between Argentina and England, and he said that, I was cheering on England. I was watching the game closely, but I was also following Maradona so intently, and that he even watched him during the warm up, and we all know the stories, but he was playing this warm up and stuff. So when you hear guys like that of that level, and we saw it as well on the English TV coverage this week with Gary Lineker kind of telling younger people like Rio Ferdinand what it was like to be on the same pitch as this guy, I think that kind of gives you an appreciation of just how good he was and just how respected he was by his peers, you know. So on a kind of personal level and for as a fan looking at it more than a journalist, I think, you ask yourself, what does Maradona mean to you? And I think that's okay, because he means something probably different to everyone. I think we're all, maybe not all of us, but certainly a lot of people are unified in a love and an admiration for him. Because no matter who you support or where you come from, you couldn't help but be astounded by the things he was able to do on a football field. And I think whether you love them or hate them, some people in England of a certain age probably do because of the hand of God, 86 and all that. I think he made you feel something when you watched him play. And I think there are too few sportsmen, too few characters like that in the world today. So, you got to cherish these guys and celebrate them. So for me personally, I saw him as a, even as I remember as a kid, I saw him as an extraordinary footballer who made me fall in love with the game. I like so many others, I grew up wanting to dribble like Maradona. You wanted to have those skills. You wanted to beat every player on the pitch. I, you know, I even you wanted to be able to score goals like that second one against England in 86. And
yeah.
Jesus, like, you know, even as an Irishman, I wanted to be able to score goals like the hand of God against England, you know. So he appeals to you in so many levels. And I think that, you know, that takes into Maradona the symbol, because there's Maradona the man and Maradona the symbol. And I think that's come across this week in the coverage. And just as Muhammad Ali wasn't just a boxer, Maradona, I don't think, wasn't just a footballer to a lot of people. He represented something. I think for many of us who grew up playing street football, who grew up in poor working class areas, he was a symbol of hope. He was a rebel. He represented the belief that the poor could overcome the rich, you know, that the south could defeat the north in a symbolic sense. So I think that's why he's a god, like in a footballer sense, in a sport sense, like in Buenos Aires and Napoli and similar cities around the world, because there's not, as far as I'm concerned, there's no denying that he transcended football and sport in general, because he was deeply flawed, because he struggled so badly with a level of fame that he wasn't, and arguably nobody could have been ready for or prepared for or dealt with. So I think he's treated as a god because he was also very human. And I've seen that in Naples, and I know you have too. And I think it's a part of, and this is why I think he's not just loved by those who saw him play. You know, the Obispo Maradona, all that stuff. I thought the Gazette coverage this week was fantastic. I thought they nailed it.
It was. They nailed it.
They really did. But it kind of got across as that it wasn't just those who saw him play. And I went and got my hair cut the other day, and the barber was talking about how he saw him playing in Puglia many years ago against Lecce. And, you know, they speak in these hushed tones. And that's a fantastic thing. But also, there are people that never saw this guy play, particularly in Naples, particularly in Buenos Aires and Argentina in general. And they idolize him. They still revere him. And that's what stands out to me. We saw the emotion this week on all the pictures and the images we've seen from Naples to Buenos Aires of a guy that, you know, his life literally became the subject of art as well. And in that sense, I see him as an immortal figure. And I'd be remiss not to mention the fact that, you know, there were so many negatives, but there were so many dark sides to this story. And nobody should glorify the things that Maradona did off the field. Nobody should glorify the lifestyle, the drugs, the prostitution, the camorra. I think we have to acknowledge that. I think we have to learn lessons from that and teach those lessons to other people. But I think we can still, at the same time, wholly celebrate the player, the kid from the street who just loved football right until the very end, obviously, and the symbol of poor people everywhere, and retain sympathy for, as Jorge Valdano said, a man who became a victim of his own genius. So, as has been said many times, it doesn't matter what Diego did with his life. What matters is what he did to mine. And I personally will always be very grateful to Maradona for that.
Beautiful. Very well said, brother. I loved it. A lot of what you said really stood out to me, but he definitely didn't leave you indifferent. That's for sure. He was made an impression, and even people who never watched the football game knew of Maradona and what he was. So beautiful, very well said. Okay, let's move on to Atalanta. And before we start talking about, you know, what's wrong with the team, because they are not as brilliant as they are, I don't want to underestimate how symbolic and how really beautiful in a lot of ways the victory at Anfield was for the trajectory of the club. I know this year and the week of Maradona, and they haven't been great in Serie A, it's kind of easy to dismiss it. But, you know, Atalanta won at Anfield. So I know you have always a very good historical perspective. So tell us, what does that mean to you?
I think the mere fact that Atalanta can go to Anfield, a university of calcio, as Cassie called it, and win there, I think that speaks volumes for the growth of the club that has, you know, just won Coppa Italia 57 years ago to its name. So I think that's a noteworthy achievement. I think, as you say, it did kind of get overlooked, you know, overshadowed, and that was wholly understandable. But this was a major victory. Yes, there were mitigating circumstances, you know. Anfield without the fans on a European night is not quite the same, you know, it doesn't carry the same fear factor. It's not quite as intimidating, but Liverpool as well have had their injury issues, as we know, and they've rested some players for a game at Brighton, a league game. So, you know, we got to bear that into it, bear that in mind and that kind of thing, and factor it into the equation. But at the end of the day, Atalanta were up against a strong side. They were like to sell on the pitch. They were excellent, I thought, from start to finish. I thought they should have been ahead by half time. They restricted Liverpool, even when they brought on as many big guns as possible, they restricted them to one shot on target, I think, of the whole match. But, you know, that's a hell of an achievement, given, you know, given the likes of the players that Liverpool have there. You know, so it's not like Liverpool are no longer a force. You know, they're still quite right there at the top of the league, you know, and they're the reigning English champions and did that in a historic fashion. So it's a historic night, and I think it should be celebrated. And you know what, David, what I loved actually about it was that they could have went there looking for a draw, you know, in terms of the group. They could have went there, they could have travelled in trepidation even after being routed 5-0 by Liverpool in Bergamo only a couple of weeks ago. You know, they could have been, you know, really, really worried about them and played defensively. But no, they went there, they took them on, they played their own game. They remained true to the philosophy that carried them so far, and they remained true to themselves, I suppose. And they got exactly what they deserved, which was a famous win that now gives them absolutely every chance of making the last 16 for the second consecutive season. Which is an incredible achievement for a club of their size.
Absolutely.
And one more thing, actually. That result, coupled with what they did last season and you know, finishing in the top four in Serie A, making the quarterfinals of the Champions League, to me, that also makes a further mockery of Gasperini's omission from the FIFA Coach of the Year award, which just absolutely baffles me, to be honest with you.
Okay, very well said. Very well said. And I'm glad we didn't just brush off aside this victory, because I think you put it very well. It does speak a lot about how far Atalanta has come. So obviously in Serie A, it hasn't been quite as good. Yesterday, they lose to Verona. They have not been their brilliant selves. And I think the other thing is the league has really gotten bad. I don't know if better is the right word, but there's a lot of teams that are going to be competing for the top. So how concerned do you think Atalanta and their fans should be in Serie A specifically this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. It's all relative, isn't it? Like, we're talking about Atalanta as if, you know, they should be top four each and every single season. I think that's kind of, in itself, a testament to what they've done in recent years. So it's certainly a distinct possibility that they might not be able to repeat what they've done, you know, in the last couple of seasons, repeat that this season. I'm a huge fan of Atalanta, as you know, I've said it many times, because of not only what they're doing, but the way they're doing it. But something you touched on there, and I think it's interesting, is like, ultimately, I'd be a bigger fan of the league itself than Atalanta, so I want a strong Serie A, like most of us. And I'm looking at the Classifica now, I'm looking at the table, and I'm seeing a really, really intriguing kind of lineup of teams in the top half of the table. A lot of teams in surprising positions, and you could argue that of the let's say the top 8-9 teams, all of them could beat one another, and that makes the season very hard to beat. Yeah, do you know what I mean? It's that balance, it's that competitive. And all the teams have their strengths, all of the teams have their flaws this season. They're all dealing with a very unique fixture list, you know, one of the most highly congested we've ever seen in history. You're getting all these injuries. We've seen a massive increase in muscular problems all over the board. So it's a tough season. It's going to be a tough league. And I do think it's better. I do think the league is more competitive. I do think we've seen an increase in quality. I think it's been very entertaining this season. I argue that to the death with anyone over what Serie A has been producing this year in difficult circumstances. So ultimately, it's probably going to come down to that the team that wins the league or the teams that qualify for the Champions League will be those that manage to field strong sides every week. You know, depth is likely to be decisive. I feel Atalanta are reasonably well stocked in that area. There's clearly issues, as we've seen. The form in Serie A has not been good whatsoever. But at the end of the day, fatigue is a problem. I think something we discussed in the last time we spoke to each other, you know, Atalanta suddenly have a lot more international players now. And one of the negatives of turning so many players into internationals is that they often come back exhausted from international breaks. And Gasperini pointed that out. So that's an issue for them. And I don't think that's whining either. I don't think that's someone just, you know, moaning and they're looking for excuses. Every coach is saying the same thing. So, you know, even look around Europe, how many teams with far greater resources than Atalanta are struggling with playing every 3 days now? Look at Inter, look at Juve, look at Liverpool, look at Manchester City, look at PSG. You know, so it's a punishing time for everyone. And I do think Atalanta will come good. I think they'll challenge. I think what we've seen before is that they're a team capable of going on these incredible streaks, these winning runs. So, look, there's no guarantees in the league this season, particularly because the league is so very open. I think it's grown in strength and depth. So it's going to be a crazy season, and it's hard to predict what's going to happen, but I do think Atalanta will improve as the season goes on.
Okay. So, yeah, and I think you are right. They are due one of their signature streaks where maybe they win 7 out of 8, something like that. I could totally see it. Now, yeah. I don't know if this is a legitimate criticism, but maybe there is something to it that, you know, Atalanta might have a problem of abundance. Like, they brought in a lot of exciting players. You can't blame Gasperini for wanting to use his new toys, but maybe, you know, that detracted from the well-oiled machine, and that maybe Atalanta, these big European nights, these great games in the Champions League, maybe has made, you know, when you're playing the Veronas of that you have to play in the league, maybe less exciting for the players. So do you think there's anything to these two potential criticisms of Atalanta this season?
I mean, yeah, there could be. I definitely understand that argument to a degree because, you know, a Champions League fixture against Liverpool or Ajax, two of the great names of European football, it's going to be hugely appealing to you, isn't it? You're going to have and I think that's natural. I think that's human nature, particularly for players playing at a club that maybe didn't expect to be in this position. You know, that it is the glamour. These are the glamour ties, and it would be natural and understandable if attention drifted or they lost a little bit of focus on league games, and certainly the results would support that to a degree. I mean, you could see how much it meant to them to be not only playing at Anfield in the European game, but to win there as well. I mean, that was fantastic to watch. It was clearly an emotional for them, and they celebrated it, and rightly so. So I understand why you would prioritize these games, even maybe subconsciously. Also, at the end of the day, you've only got 6 group games. You know, there's not much room for error. It is a sprint, you know, to get to about 12 points to get through to the last 16. The league, on the other hand, is a marathon, particularly this year. So there is always time to catch up. So if Atalanta were to get through this group, and their destiny is in their own hands now after that win at Anfield, they can forget about Europe until February. And that's kind of one of the other reasons I think that we will see an upturn in their league form over the winter, you know, provided they can continue to rotate intelligently and avoid serious injuries, which is what everyone's trying to do at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. So they're integrating Ilicic, who's had a complicated year. Papu Gomez, you know, got off to a great start, maybe not as exciting recently. They did get their starting keeper back, Golini, although he got hurt a little bit. But when you look at Atalanta's slow start in Serie A, are there some players that have underachieved that you say when these guys get going again, the team will be so much better?
Yeah, I think there's definitely an element of that. I don't want to be too harsh on players who've done extraordinary things for a couple of seasons, and particularly because, as I said, this campaign is so intense. But it's clear, that some players are coping better than others with this kind of schedule, that some guys are playing better than others. I don't think Zapata has played with great consistency.
Yeah.
As you said, Gomez has been up and down a little bit. Ilicic too, for very, you know, understandable reasons. I think both Papu and Ilicic kind of showed their class at Anfield, though. I thought
Gomez
was the best player on the pitch, and it was actually fantastic to hear people I know that, you know, almost primarily follow English football say, God almighty, this Gomez fellow is a lovely player, isn't he? And I was like, yeah, he has been for some time. He's supremely talented. So they've had their ups and downs, and I suppose you would expect that at their age as well with the intensity of the schedule. I think looking further back, Caldara, I think, hasn't been great. I think his ratings reflect that. I think we're still kind of waiting for him to be the player we all thought he would be or thought he would, well, hoped he would be. And I think we're inclined to expect more with someone like Malinovsky as well, who's yet to score this season. I mean, I think we talked about him a lot last season. He's kicked him with a lot of goals, a lot of spectacular goals, and he's yet to get going in that sense as well. So guys like that are going to be really important for all the reasons we've stated earlier regarding fatigue and other things, because guys like that, you know, there was there. The key is, as we said before so many times, Atalanta had a 12th man, a 13th man, a 14th man, a 15th man. Like, the squad was key last season to compete on 2 fronts, and they need that again if they're going to secure a top four finish. So there's enough quality there, I'm convinced, still, for them to balance it out. I just think they're going to need a bit of time to deal with the dual threat or difficulty in playing in Europe and in Serie A.
Absolutely. So let's switch gears. You wrote about Conte earlier this week. It was before the Real Madrid game, which, man, that was a rough one to watch. But they did well against the Swallow. That must be said. I thought that was maybe their best game of the season.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So I thought you did a great job in your article. Conte really did get everything that he wanted from Inter. They've made huge investments in the squad. And then, you know, you have this great game where Darmian ends up playing better than Hakimi has in his system. And now you wonder what's going to happen there. So let me ask you this. Based on what you saw in Sassuolo, the match in Sassuolo, do you think Conte can still turn things around at Inter this season?
Yeah, I do, ultimately. Look, there's no denying that things are not going according to plan at Inter at all.
As you say, I did write
in the article that He's been pretty much given everything he asked for, and the problem is when you have all that power, there's no one else to blame, really. And I think I understand why people are like yourself, I have a lot of friends who are Inter fans, and I understand there's a lot of frustration there, and they're tired of excuses, and I really do get that, because I think he's been given so much and he made so many demands that you can't really come out in an interview afterwards and say this and complain about that. And because everybody's in the same boat, and also you have an unprecedented, let's say, level of power in terms of, you know, picking transfers. And you're talking about Darmian and Hakimi and guys like they're having to deliver. Vidal was almost symbolic of it against
Real
Madrid. Yeah,
absolutely.
He went out of his way to sign this guy, and he was like, I want guys like this. I want winners. This mentality. And then he let you down with the most stupid red card in the world. And I was sitting there watching this going, this is perfect. This is almost too good that the guy he fought so hard and he made such a big deal has absolutely betrayed him, like in a massive match. So I think it's going to be a disaster if they go to Europe, which I think they will at this stage. It looks really, really bleak. I know there's still hope, but I think that's going to be a major setback. But if I hadn't been for that win yesterday at the Swallow, I really would have. I was starting to wonder what's going to happen here. You know,
I agree.
The results were almost forcing them into a decision that they were going to have to make make a choice, you know, and they've gone all in with Conte. They really have backed them. So it would have been remarkable if they'd lost the Sassuolo yesterday. So he needed that. Now, again, I noticed that people have been critical of how they went about the game yesterday, how they defended. Oh, like a team like Inter shouldn't play like that against a provincial team. Well, hold on. You know, Sassuolo are a fantastic side. They're great going forward. That was a great victory. At the end of the day, credit where it's due. If we're going to stick the boot into Conte, we also have to acknowledge when he gets it right. And he made some changes there, like Barella playing in front of the defense there yesterday. So, like, we have to acknowledge that. I think we also have to acknowledge that victory took them up to second in the table. So, for all this, you know, their poor performances this season, which, you know, they were, I thought, for an hour against Torino last week, they were absolutely abysmal. So, I'm not papering over in the cracks. I'm just saying we have to look at it in context and look at the picture. So it's a tough situation. I think it's going to be up and down like this all season. I think it's a fine line always with Conte. I feel like we're in a precarious situation where he's either going to, you know, produce a great set of results, or he's going to absolutely lose it after a match. And you could even see him quit, you know, as we've seen before. So this is where we're at with him. And it's such a massive pivotal season for Inter and Conte. I think that it's just going to be fascinating to watch. It really is, and I genuinely admit it now freely. I do not know how it's going to go, because if he could either get it together, they could rally, this could galvanize them, they could go on a run now in Serie A again, maybe after Europe like Atalanta, they could string a lot of results together, or they could lose a game. Conte will go on the offensive again about how he doesn't have the depth of the squad, and someone at the club, they'll say, no, we've had enough, you know, enough complaints, enough public criticism. That's it. So it could go either way. I really don't know.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. That game against the Swallow can really change the trajectory season. Yeah, definitely, because I'm with you. Had they lost that game, I then would have been like, okay, this is really going to take a turn for the worse. Mm-hmm. So let's close on this. Important to know, we are recording this right before the Milan game's about to kick off. So we don't know, before we record this, we don't know. So I want to ask you right now, if you had to pick a team for the Scudetto, who would it be? I'm going to tell you, I had picked Inter to start the season right now, although yesterday they looked bad against Benevento. I feel I'd be very surprised if Juve doesn't win the Scudetto. It just feels like a crazy season, and I think at the end of the day, their quality is going to come through. But what do you think's going to happen? And again, we're recording this before the Milan game, so it might turn very differently. If you had to pick a team, who would it be and why?
Yeah, it's funny actually. I was like yourself. I did think it would be Inter before the season, and now I'm definitely leaning more towards Juve. But look, what Milan are doing is incredible. I've been so impressed. I was so impressed with what they're doing and have been doing since the turn of the year, and I genuinely hope it continues. To go back to an earlier point, I want to see a strong Serie A, and in my opinion, Serie A needs a strong Milan. It needs a strong
Absolutely.
Inter.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? We all remember the glory days of the Seven Sisters, and there were so many teams competing at the top of the table. That's what we all want to see. And I have my doubts of whether Milan can sustain it in terms of the squad. And, you know, Ibra coming in and out and all this. He's been so inspirational, so integral to how they play that you wonder, can he maintain it? And what he's doing is remarkable, like the squad in general. But at this stage, for the reasons you touched on there, you'd have to back Juve. I mean, they have a deeper squad than anyone. You would imagine that they'll improve as the season goes on. And Pirlo will too. I mean, he's pretty much learning on the job at the end of the day, let's face it. I think they're quite average at the moment. I think they're very, very dependent on Ronaldo and Morata in attack. And De Ligt in defence, I think, is as you've said yourself several times, I think he's absolutely key for them. Again, it's like every season they were talking about. The midfield to me is still painfully mediocre. I can't see them getting close to winning the Champions League, let me put it like that, definitely. And in a season that's going to take its toll, I suppose, on a lot of sides, particularly those with smaller resources and not as much depth, Juve could still win Serie A. And I would agree with you that at the end of the day, it probably will come down to their superior quality. And they should, I believe they will improve as the season goes on under Pirlo, because he's trying out different things. It's been quite radical, some of the changes he's made, and that's going to take time. And when they click, it'll be a major problem for everyone else in the league. I don't think they're great. I don't think they're that impressive. I don't think they'll get close to winning the Champions League. But in a season like this, with the hectic schedule, and it's going to be grueling, and it's really going to take a toll on people, I think it's hard to back against, you know, the champions, and particularly because of the vastly superior depth they have and resources. So.
Well said, Mark. Perfect timing. We made it right before kickoff of Milan. It's a pleasure to chat with you, my friend. Definitely check out the work Mark puts out on Goal. As I mentioned, great stuff with John Barnes on Maradona. Wrote about Conte, wrote about Messi recently. We love reading your work and chatting with you, my friend. So thanks so much for doing this, and I look forward to talking again with you very soon.
Not at all, man. It's genuinely a pleasure. Thanks very much.